welcome to Blue Ridge Free State, a podcast about politics, culture, and life here in Appalachia. I'm your host, Mason Adams, coming to you today from the Rocky Knob Loop Trail, where I'm in the middle of a 10.8, I think, mile trail run slash hike. Just taking a much needed time to spend outside here in these mountains. Today's episode includes an interview with Paul Ravenwood, an Eastern Tennessee-based musician. Paul lives near Jonesboro, which, if you read John Alexander Williams' History of Appalachia, is one of the two communities that Williams lifts up as possible paths forward in Appalachia. He lifts up Jonesboro because of its storytelling, heritage, and festival, and culture, and economy that's been built around that. The other he lifts up is Fayetteville, West Virginia, and its whitewater rafting. But Paul, I interviewed him a year ago. It's been over a year that I've been sitting on this. Paul plays in a black metal group called Twilight Fauna. I say group now because it is a group. Josh Thieler from Slaves BC in the Pittsburgh area plays drums in it. Before Josh joined, I think it was just Paul and occasional guests. He plays sort of atmospheric black metal. The group's been incorporating a lot more folk elements recently. Paul also does Green Elder, which is a neo-folk project. And we has a fun conversation. We talk about both of those bands. We talk about folk music. We talk about how he got into metal. Paul's, since we released this, Twilight Fauna has released an EP, which Paul talks about that he recorded on his porch. And then he and Josh have recorded another album and released it called Foundations. It's excellent. I played a little bit of it up top. And a lot going on for me. Today is the day after Juneteenth. There was a celebration slash Black Lives Matter protest in Floyd last night where people were across the street waving Confederate flags. One video shared by the editor of the Floyd Press went quasi-viral, that one of the guys who's right up on the line waving a Confederate flag takes off a shirt, starts cussing, acts like he's gonna get in a fight with a guy before a bunch of sheriff's deputies and tactical gear kind of escort him off. I probably should have been there last night. I'm feeling a lot of guilt that I wasn't. It reminds me of August 12th, 2017, when Heather Heyer was murdered in the streets of Charlottesville. I was out hiking with my family in the Cascades, and my journalism mission is very important to me, and at the same time my family is very important to me. And you know, since my family started in 2011, I've always sort of felt that tension, that work-life balance, and it's something I struggle with. And I'm going to write about it more in a newsletter that's going to drop in a couple of days. Check out my site, masonadams.net. Sign up for my newsletter if you haven't. I'll talk a little bit more about my journalism here at the end, but until then, here, enjoy this interview with Paul Ravenwood from Twilight Fauna.
What were some of your earliest memories of music? And did your parents listen to music in the house?
They did. I think especially Dad. I kind of joked about this, but I think there was definitely a breed of Southern people in the 70s that were hippies. Like, I always told him he was a Southern rock hippie, was kind of the way I seen it. So he loved Southern rock bands. Anytime they came through Knoxville, we'd go see him. Like, my first concert was ZZ Top, and I was like 5 years old. Ear protection, yeah. No nothing. Just like, you know, take me there and sit me in the front row. So we'd always go out and see, like, Lynyrd Skynyrd, what was left of him at that point. Marshall Tucker, 38 Special, that kind of stuff. So I sort of grew up with that ingrained in me, I think. But then I discovered metal in my early teens.
Tell me about that.
Somebody had a Judas Priest record, and it's going to sound super cliche, but that literally changed my life. It was Sad Wings of Destiny. Uh-huh. And I have a way older sister, and one of her friends just happened to have it and put it on the turntable. And I was just like, oh my God, this is what I've been waiting for. And so got super into the Priest and Maiden. Priest especially, though.
Yeah.
Like, if you go and look at my record collection, I have, like, every Priest record. So I think that really kind of carried me through my early teens. And then somehow tape trading, even in Bybee, Tennessee, somebody had a Dart Throne tape. Somebody had Transylvanian Hunger. I have no idea how. I mean, this was probably 98 or 99. And I still don't know how he got the tape, but put that in, and I was like, oh my God, this is another one of those moments. You know, it was like Judas Priest, Sad Wings of Destiny, Dark Throne, Transylvanian Hunger. And then that, now I'm 33, and that's where I am still.
Where were you when you heard of that Dark Throne?
Camping.
Camping.
Yeah.
I can't imagine a better way to be introduced to that particular album than on probably a tape that's been dubbed the third time over at camping. I mean, I don't know how bad. But, like, tape dubbed cassettes, you lose a little bit of quality. But that album, like, that might actually help it. I mean, it might enhance it, right?
It really does. And it's crazy because, like, maybe if I'd heard that, if somebody had, like, walked into my bedroom and was like, play this, I may have been like, oh, this is awful. But I just, in that moment and hearing it, like, outside, and there was a campfire going, and I was just like, this made so much sense to me. But then I got kind of bummed for a long time because, like, I got super into, like, Dark Throne and Gorgoroth especially, like, those two, like, Norwegian bands. But then I realized that there really wasn't anything, at least in the U.S. for the most part at that time. So it kind of bummed me out, I think, as I got in my 20s and I realized that there wasn't any music that spoke to my own experience. You know, because, like, Transylvanian Hunger is awesome, but I ain't never been to Transylvania. You know, like, what do I know about Norwegian forest? And so I think that's sort of where my own music sort of jumped in there. And I was like, huh, maybe I should try to see if this would work.
Yeah. I mean, I know I've listened, when I first started listening to black metal too, I kind of remember listening to it on some reporting trips. And there was a certain something about driving through the mountains and hearing, like, I think it was the very first Enslaved album, the first Enslaved full length, not Frost, but the one before it. And it just seemed to, like, fit with the landscape. I think it was either the sun was coming up or going down.
Right.
But it was perfect. What are some of the other, maybe a couple, name just maybe three or four of the kind of records that were big influences on your childhood, high school, you know, through the 90s, I guess.
Yeah. In high school, this is going to be one that's going to be way out there compared to what we're talking about, but definitely Pink Floyd, actually. That was just one of those, I feel like they just had so many, like, ideas in their albums.
Yeah.
To me, they were the first real concept albums I had heard where it wasn't just a collection of songs, but they were trying to say something together with all of them. I think that really sort of had an influence on me. In high school, probably the Dropkick Murphys, I think, because I think they sort of hit that, like, working class mentality, you know, that I would see. And the other thing I think that had a huge influence on me in terms of them was that they're very regional. You know, like, when you hear the Dropkick Murphys, you know it's Boston. You know, they have, like, pride in, like, their hometown. And I think that really kind of, that struck a chord with me.
I know you have a soft spot in your heart for folk music too, obviously, with Green Elder. Mm-hmm. You talk a lot about Alice Gerard and Hazel Dickens. How did you get into folk music?
Well, I think when I was a kid, I always heard it. I grew up in church, and so the older women in my family would still sit, and they would sing on their porches, which is kind of amazing. It's one of the things I'm always going to regret in life, that I didn't somehow figure out a way to record them, you know, back in that time period. Because they would sing the very traditional Appalachian ballad style, where it was just vocals. And so I think I was always around it. But it's kind of strange, because as a kid, I didn't really appreciate it. You know, it was one of those things where it was like, well, it's, this is what the old folks listen to. You know, I was like, oh yeah, I'm going to be a metal musician. If you'd asked me when I was 12 or 13, like, do you have an appreciation for folk music? I would have been like, hell no. You know, that's what my grandmother listens to. I think it hit me when I left, and, maybe in my early 20s, really, when I sort of looked back on that and realized it was something special, because it was the song of my people. You know, the metal music that I was listening to, I love the style of it, but it wasn't really speaking to me in terms of my own history or culture, whereas some of the old folk music really, really was. And so I think when I started sort of dissecting music versus just listening to, you know, whatever CD I could grab, I think it really started speaking to me. And so I started going back and digging through a lot of that stuff. But it wasn't till maybe I was like 21, 22 in college, probably.
Yeah. Find Allison Hazel?
That's a great question that I've never thought about before. Honestly, I don't know. It was probably like an early internet search, I think, you know, when I was in my early 20s. I'm like, you know, maybe I typed in progressive folk music or something, because they were, for their time, you know, they were sort of the, I don't know if they were the first, but they were the first major progressive women, you know, who were singing about political stuff, I think. So they broke a lot of barriers. So I think that sort of put them on my radar. Hazel Dickens, especially, I think, with her sort of coal mining songs, those always just hit me incredibly hard. There's one where she sings Black Lung a cappella. Mm-hmm. I think it's about her brother, I believe, who died of black lung. And that song, I remember specifically listening to it in my apartment just over and over. Drove my wife crazy, because, like, Hazel Dickens has, like, that shrill, like, yeah, high-pitched, you know, was it the high lonesome voice?
Oh, yeah.
And I just had it on repeat. I remember it was, like, 2 hours of just this, like, same song. It's, like, 7 minutes. So I used to just binge listen that stuff. And then from there, I think, you know, I really jumped into Stanley Brothers.
Yeah.
Sort of the classic bluegrass stuff. And it just sort of snowballed. And so I think when I started sort of seriously writing my own music, it got to a point where I think my first couple of tries at albums, and they're sort of out there if you want to find them on the internet, but to me, my early stuff is not good. At least I don't think so. Some people love those albums and they still hit me up, but they're just not reflective, I think, of where I am now. But I think they were just sort of straight black metal. It was me just trying to be like, okay, then I'm going to jump in here and make like Appalachian Gorgoroth. But to me, they were just straight black metal records. And so as I developed, I think, over the period of, I don't know, I guess what I've been doing this, I think 8 years now. The first two or three was sort of figuring out how to incorporate my own culture, I guess, into that.
I want to kind of talk about the, for lack of a better term, the quote unquote Appalachian metal scene.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, I hear you and I hear Nechachwan, and I don't think Austin classifies himself as Appalachian metal. He says, I live across the state. It's about Kentucky, but
yeah,
it still has some parallels. But you guys kind of, I think all, you know, the sense I get is that there's no copycats. Everybody's doing their own thing,
yeah,
and kind of bubbles up, and it seems, and so it kind of makes this coherent scene in a way, even though it spans these large geographic distances. And do you feel like you're part of a movement or part of a scene at all?
I think I do, in the sense of that there's a group of bands from the region, and even Austin still, even though he's in Minnesota, that are exploring the same themes. And so I think we each sort of have our own take on it, and we definitely have our own style of sound.
Yeah.
But it's sort of, I think what sets it apart though from other scenes is, for example, like if you listen to a whole bunch of black metal, you can hear a song and be like, oh, that is the Norwegian style, or oh, this sounds like it's from the Pacific Northwest. It's there's a cohesion in the way things sound. I think that's what we don't have that separates us from what people would say a scene. Or think about how grunge happened, and so like a lot of those bands have very similar sound characteristics. We don't have that, but I think we definitely do have bands that are talking about this region in their own way and exploring what it's like to live here.
Yeah.
So to me, I think there is a scene in that sense of people exploring the same topics.
And that, I think it makes sense because Appalachia is such a sprawling, diverse place. I mean, the mountains of Western Pennsylvania feel completely different from, you know, Southern West Virginia, which in turn feels different from Southwest Virginia, and mm-hmm. East Tennessee is completely different. So the mountains are so different. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense the sounds would be different as well.
To me, I think the reason we sound so much different is a function of how spread out we are. You know, when you think about, you know, other, I guess, music scenes, they're sort of in the same place where bands can hear each other play all the time. And so, you know, here it's not like I can run out and hear Nechachuan play mm-hmm. every Friday night, you know, like the local music hall or whatever. So I think we sort of have our own musical interest in how we bring those themes to light. But I think it's because we're so spread out. You know, I think that's what has led to this difference in sound. And I think to me, that's so much better, because if we all sounded the same, you know, it wouldn't be nearly as exciting. There wouldn't, you know, there wouldn't be enough variation for everybody to find, you know, the band that they like.
Let's talk about collaboration, because you talked about the geographic distances, and you've done some collaborating across geographic distances.
Yeah.
How'd you hook up with Josh from Slaves BC?
Well, that's one of those crazy, that would have been a 2017, I think, story of literally, I found my drummer on Twitter. You know, it's weird because even Twitter and its huge space or whatever, if you get a topic like underground music, it suddenly becomes a very small community. And so there's tons of folks on Twitter that are into the same kind of music that I am. Everybody gets on and talks to each other. And it was one of those things where I don't even know how it came about, other than I knew with The Year the Stars Fell that I wanted somebody that could just do crushing drums. Like I wanted that album to just really be almost punishing to listen to. And I actually, I don't know if I've ever told this story, but I actually recorded drums for that entire album myself. I had a full album ready to go and listened to it. And I was like, this ain't good enough. It's not what I want on the record. Completely deleted those drums. It was 6 months of work. One day, literally one button, hit delete. Drums are gone. I was like, if I can't do it, I'm not going to do it. And then started asking around for drummers, and was familiar with Josh and what he does in Slaves BC. And something, too, I think that gets overlooked is my music is so personal that I couldn't just pick a drummer because they were good. Like, I needed somebody that, I don't know, felt... like a, if I say good human being, maybe that's a low standard, but somebody I felt close to, I guess. And so he and I got to talking, and it just sort of immediately, I was like, yes, this guy and me are on the same page. So I had no idea what to expect. I think he practiced for like about 6 weeks or 2 months up in Pittsburgh, and then packed all of his drums in a car, drove him down here. He literally drove all day, got to my house, unpacked drums, and we were recording about an hour later. And as soon as he finished the first song, I sort of turned around to him and I was like, you're in the band now. And I didn't really even ask him. Like, and I still to this day have never asked him. I think maybe I was afraid he might say no.
Well, y'all have been in publicity photos together at this point. I think it's safe to say that's confirmed two albums later. Two albums and a split. That Evergreen Refuge album split is awesome, too.
Oh,
it's one
yeah.
of my favorite things. I mean, the last couple of records Twilight Fauna has done in that split are all awesome. How about Arete? Am I pronouncing that right?
It's actually Arete.
Arete.
Yeah. Right. Nobody knows how to... It's funny because we had recorded a demo for that band, and then I flew out to Denver after that just to hang out with those guys because I'd never met them in person. And got off the plane, and the first conversation we had is how to say our band name because we were all saying it differently. So I think we settled on Arete.
Yeah. What does it mean? What is?
It's actually like the peak of a mountain. We're like basically the very peak of a ridge, I guess. So like in the Rockies, we don't really have them here because ours are more rounded.
Yeah.
But like if you go to the Rockies and go to like to 14,000 feet to one of the 14ers, it's literally just a mound of rocks and like a point where it's like one rock wide at the very top. That's an Arete.
Okay.
Those guys, I'm trying to think how that all came about. I guess initially it was an internet. Well, I guess our three bands kind of came up together, sort of at the same time. I think our stuff really got going with, Twilight Fauna, Deafest, and Evergreen Refuge. And so we just got to know each other and, talk to each other for, I guess probably 3 or 4 years there. Almost every day we would message. And it's kind of crazy because like you can never, even though you've never met somebody, if you talk to them every day, you know, I mean, over that 3 or 4 year period, you know, some of us got married, some of us had kids, some of us lost people. You really get to know people when you sort of go through those struggles with them.
Yeah.
And so I guess after being friends for 4 or 5 years, we finally said, you know, why don't we try to do something all together? Let's just see how it goes. And so we recorded that demo. I'm not even sure. It's been like 3 years ago. And suddenly realized it felt really special. I mean, I think we all like everyone involved said that demo was like, oh, this is the best music we've ever done when we combine our sort of skill sets, I guess. We would sort of work sporadically, I guess. So they would get together and write the guitars and do demo drums and then would send it to me, and then I would do vocals and any sort of like folk instruments, and then would send it back to them, and they'd say, okay, yeah, this is good, or maybe change this here or there. And then we got to the end of it, and maybe that was, I don't know, a year and a half of doing that. And then we realized that we wanted better drums on it. I won't say better, but we wanted a drummer before the drums are programmed. Like on the demo, they're programmed. It's very good programming, but I think Dylan had to sort of sit down and program those by hand. It's really tedious. And so we wanted a more natural drum sound. So then I recommended Josh. And so we got him into a studio up in Pittsburgh. That got done. And how did this go? And then we had, I want to say, three labels pick it up. and then drop. It just fell through every time. And so it literally got to the point where we had ordered CDs and we were just like, we're just going to put it out there. Like, you know, it's like it's been 2.5 years because we just couldn't find anybody that vinyl right now, I think, is really sort of going through a slump. And so a lot of vinyl labels are going under. So it was hard to find someone who wanted to pick up and invest in it. And I think we were just like at the end of our rope with it. And then that's when Fear in the Void picked it up. Because I know those guys. And they literally found out. I said, I actually messaged one of them and was like, hey, we're going to put the CD out. This is coming out on Friday. And they were like, whoa, don't put this out because we're going to put it out. So like they came in at the last minute and saved the day.
Where are you finding inspiration these days? What's inspiring you right now?
Two things, I think. One, I think the landscape will always inspire me. I don't know if you saw it when you're driving in, because you sort of got here at dark, but just sort of, I don't know how you can not be inspired of just being able to look out and see the rolling hills. Or, you know, if you notice on this house, there's three porches. So I sit out on my porch every day and play guitar. This morning it was 19 degrees here and I was out on my porch freezing to death. Playing guitar. So that's number one. I think it's the landscape is just, it feels like home. No matter where I go, this is home.
Yeah.
Number two, I think here lately has really been the people, of Appalachia. It's, you know, maybe it's the pipeline thing that's fresh on my mind, but, you know, it's weird because maybe 10 years ago or something, I think I was a much more jaded younger man. And I was just like, you know, like I could just move back into the mountains. And if I never saw anybody, I would be fine. But I think in the last, as I've gotten older, I think I genuinely have an appreciation for the people that live here much more so than I did when I was younger. So like I see people strapping themselves to trees, you know, to try to protect the landscape, or laying down in front of bulldozers, trying to protect what they see as their home. And so to me, I think here lately, that's really weighed heavily mm-hmm. on me. It's weird. I wouldn't really say that my stuff is political per se, in the sense of I don't sit down and try to push some agenda with it. But I think it's sort of inherent in my music, at least I hope it is, that I care about the landscape. But I think really I just have an appreciation for the culture, I think, much more than I did maybe, you know, when I was in my late teens or early 20s.
What's next? What's in the future? Do you have new records coming? You always do. You're one of the most prolific musicians I know.
I know. It's funny because I was like, I'm going to take this year off. And I guess...
Yeah, you told me that. And I was like, there's no way. He's going to release like Green Nettle the Thing and the Twilight Fauna is going to drop in early 2019.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because it's my year off turned into I'm just doing 2 7-inch records instead of a bunch of full lengths. So I just had the Green Elder record come out, and that was a split with a band out of Portland, called Horse Cult. And, on their side, they do an old Gene Ritchie song in a new way, which is just amazing to me.
Which song?
Nautiman Town.
Okay.
Which I guess it's an older song, way well beyond Gene Ritchie.
Yeah. But, fair. Same thing as Fair Nautiman Town, right? Occasionally yeah. see it called that, right?
Yeah. So it's, yeah. But I think her, when I think about that song, her version is what comes to mind. So I just had that come out. And then I'm sort of doing a special thing later this year where I realized, and I think this really is a function of you asked me earlier about my new living space. Yeah. And so I try to write every day. I play guitar for at least an hour a day. And most of the time here, it's on my porch. It's like, this is the first time in several years when I can literally sit on my porch all day and not see another person. You can just play guitar and look into the woods. I realized that I play a lot of Twilight Fauna songs acoustically when I'm sitting on my porch, but nobody ever hears them. Like, when I write a lot of the Twilight Fauna stuff, I actually write it on acoustic guitar. So it sort of developed into this idea to do a live 7-inch record, which is kind of weird for a band that never plays live. But I literally probably, what is it? I don't know, like 50 feet on my back porch from where we're sitting now. I literally dragged all my gear out there, put up 2 microphones, including actually the one that you're using, and tied my dogs off to the porch like I normally do, and played 2 songs. And I said, this is the craziest thing maybe I've ever done, but I hit record and said, whatever I play on these 2 songs is going to go in a live 7-inch record. Like, I wanted to force myself to where if I was standing in front of a group of people, you know, there's no tape backs on a live setting. So I literally put myself to that and recorded 2 songs, and they're going on a record. No overdubs, no nothing. Some slight mastering just to get it on the record okay. But it's literally me on my porch, me and my guitar. And so we're going to see how that goes.
Did you hear the dogs at all?
Bark at all? Yeah, they didn't bark. I was so happy for that because I got 2 hound dogs, and sometimes they will howl and bark. And I was like, oh, because I was going to stick to it. You know, I say that if the last 5 minutes of the record would have been straight howling, I don't know if I would have stuck to it. But I did. You can hear them like walking around, like rustling in the leaves. Mm-hmm. I tried to make it where if somebody was sitting there with me, they were there in that moment. You know, yeah. It's like capturing that on a record.
Anything else you want to plug or talk about or,
no, coming up? I think we've covered a lot of ground. If you, want to check out my stuff, it's all on Bandcamp. So if you do, Twilight Fauna, .bandcamp.com or greenelder.bandcamp.com. All my stuff will be on there. If you like it, I'd appreciate you grabbing something. I self-release all my own stuff, so it's 100% sort of do-it-yourself.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like if you, you know, if you buy a Metallica record, what, they have 10 million of those made. I have 200 records made. And so if you buy one of those, it's of a great help.
Hey, everybody. Hope you enjoyed the interview. It was certainly a fun one to do. It came at the end of a long day in which I'd gotten up early, milked the goats, been out before sunrise, went down to Dickinson County and rode around with a landowner down there, drove down to Knoxville to sell some books, and then stopped and interviewed Paul on the way back to Floyd County. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed getting to meet Paul in person after corresponding with him for, you know, years, honestly. So I am just finishing up my 10.8-mile trail run back here at the Saddle, overlooking the Blue Ridge Parkway, looking down at Rock Castle Gorge on one side and toward Buffalo Mountain and Floyd on the other, the iconic Buffalo Mountain. Thank you for listening to Blue Ridge Fee State. It's obviously been a while since I posted an episode. I've got a few more planned here and some new ones as well. I've got one more from 2019 that I still haven't played yet, but I think is an awesome interview that hasn't lost any of its relevance with the passage of a year. To support my journalism, please check me out on patreon.com. Blue Ridge Free State is going to remain free, but I'm also doing some short podcasts, 1 or 2 a month, talking about my journalism and why I do what I do. If you want to support my independent mountain journalism, please visit Patreon. It's the same as my Twitter handle, Mason Adams, MasonAtoms. Please check out and support Paul through Twilight Fauna and Green Elder. I think probably the best place to find both of those is on Bandcamp. Just Google search for both of them. And yeah, please write me. Let me know what you think. You can reach me at mason@masonadams.net. And like I said, I've got a newsletter with some news dropping here in the next couple of days with the solstice. So please, if you haven't signed up for that, it's at masonadams.net. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time on Blue Ridge Free State.